everyone. Welcome to Gale Boys. This is Star Wars Month Part 2. I'm Jedi Knight Liam, joined by Jedi Master Jordan.
Yeah, this is episode 2 of 4, and this is rewatching the movies that we're talking about today. Is I don't know, man. They're either like incredibly boring or just like incredibly batshit. George Lucas can't seem to like pick a tone for what his movies are, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, so this is our prequel section of Star Wars Month. If we sound a little deflated, this was tough. This was a tough episode to get everything for, because I had to watch The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones for the first time in a long time, and my God, man, holy fuck. But
I still insist Attack of the Clones is like one of the worst movies ever made. I rewatched that yesterday. Why would you watch this and think like anyone else would be on board for this? Even prequel defenders don't fucking like defend it. It's literally bottom of the barrel shit.
I don't know if it is the worst thing I've ever seen, but if you write a list of 100 worst films ever made, it might be on there. I mean, it's... we'll get into it when we get into it, but let's get to the news.
I got villas in Brazil, Tahiti, East Hampton, West Hampton. Sergio gonna be fine. Fuck a recession.
Yeah, we may as well get into a story that we were going to do last episode, but unfortunately, things happened in Israel, so that had to be, this had to be put on the back burner. It's still developing too, so it's, you know, it's able to sit on the stove nice and hot for us to pick up. For those who don't know, P. Diddy, aka Sean Combs, aka Diddy, aka whatever the fuck he's going by at this point, Diddy Kong, I don't fucking know.
Yeah, the artist formerly known as Diddy seemed to be whatever, like, the jail number he'll be assigned.
Yeah, I think most people know at this point. Some things have come out about him. We'll start from the beginning. This all started with a lawsuit that detailed some genuinely horrific shit. Like domestic violence is one thing, but what this lawsuit detailed. I'll post the lawsuit in the description so you can read it yourself, because it's damning shit. And Diddy responds to it like, this is all horrible lies, how dare you? And then a day later, he settles it out of court, which is always a great sign. How dare you slander me? How much you want to stop saying this shit about me?
It reminds me of the Michael Jackson thing of, like, every time he got accused of the most horrific shit imaginable, $3-4 million payoff, please make this go away. That's a sure sign that you're totally innocent and vindicated when you pay what is essentially hush money to your cavalcade of victims.
This kind of snowballed over a period of time. There have been rumblings about Diddy being the devil for years, but it all culminated about a few weeks ago when the FBI and Homeland Security raided all of his properties, took his hard drives. Several of his sons were at these properties. They got arrested as well. It was wild. It's kind of surreal. It made me think of, this is a little off the beaten path, but it made me think of like when Jared Fogle's house got raided. Because when you raid a property, you have to have a lot of evidence. Like, you can't just go in with a warrant and then just like rifle through stuff. You actually have to have evidence to... A grand jury has to approve it. So to get enough evidence to raid multiple properties is... They got some shit on you that's bad.
The Subway Jared thing has always baffled me. He was just a guy who ate some, like, a bunch of sandwiches, and all of a sudden he's like... He's not only a millionaire, but he's like hanging around like premiers and stuff. So what's going on here? Well, does he have some like dark magic or something?
I think one of the reasons it's so interesting is that everyone just seemed to forget about that Subway had a creepy pedophile on their payroll for fucking years. And like right after he got fired and got sentenced, everyone kind of dropped him. Like, guys, he was on TV for like 15 years. He had cameos in movies. I remember the last thing I saw him in was Sharknado 2. Where the entire thing is just like, it's literally just like a 30-second plug for Subway that he's in. But that's how like high profile he was. And then he gets arrested for that. And then no one ever talks about it. It's so fucking weird.
And that's funny how like every Subway he went to, he had some like PR guys who be like, look, he might have got like handsy with some of the fucking like jail bait employees, but don't mention it, he's getting help.
Yeah,
they did that to like literally every fucking franchise they went to. Fucking wild one.
The phone calls of him talking about going to Thailand, which is like, you know, if you're going to Thailand for any other reason other than legitimate business, you're up to something. Anyway, going back to Diddy, but yeah, so they raid his house, and Diddy is already in the air in his private jet, and he has fled to the Caribbean. And he's been pretty quiet lately. He did post a weird video on Instagram about a day ago, kind of a cryptic. I feel like this is his version of a Kevin Spacey Christmas video or something, just kind of taunting the authorities. Ha ha, you can't get me. But yeah.
Yeah, that's that seems to be like a very like irony poison thing, guys. We talked about how Ezra Miller would do that in our Flash episode. When he's on the run, he's posting videos taunting the cops. That seems to be like an ongoing thread for people who get in trouble.
Well, I mean, like, this is serious, what Diddy has been accused of. And the rabbit hole, I know one of the things that's so wild about Diddy is the amount of things that I used to read as conspiracy that I now fully fucking believe. You two and I talked about this, the theory that he pimped out Usher as a male prostitute. I used to think that was just jokes, but now I'm legit thinking that's a possibility. It's even going back to, like, there was a murder in 1999 that the theory is J-Lo ordered a hit that Diddy paid to deliver on, and I think they're reopening that case now. So it'd be fun to see Jennifer Lopez in the middle of her Netflix premiere get put dragged away in cuffs. That would be fun.
I'm just picturing Ben Affleck outside Jennifer Gardner's house with the fucking John Cusack boombox. Just begging, please take me back.
He probably...
Yeah, it is. Oh yeah, he would do that. He would absolutely do that. It's funny. Diddy is like music industry version of Epstein. One of the first... I know Dr. Dre was like the first like rap billionaire, but Diddy was the second. So that level of wealth gets you got like very bizarre connections. And just the idea that like fucking J-Lo ordered a hit on someone, it's like, okay.
I mean, right. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, but the thing is that Diddy, you know, the connections with Diddy run even before that. When he was growing up, his father was doing business with Frank Lucas, the Harlem drug lord who Denzel played in American Gangster. Yeah, that's who Diddy's dad was doing business with. So
was Diddy's dad Idris Elba by any chance?
That again, we have to look into all of this. I feel like we just get all the files, let's open them up, let's start from square one here. But yeah, and again, his feud with Suge Knight in the 90s, because people forget, like, he started his business with like Bad Boy Records around the time Suge Knight was running Death Row. This is just me, because I've always found like the Suge Knight's a whole other fucking can of worms. He basically ran Death Row like a fucking mob boss, and they had like a bit of a civil war, him and Diddy. They would like, one of the stories was like, should I kidnap one of Diddy's bodyguards and made him drink his own piss and things like that. 90s hip hop is fucking insane. You get into like the murders of Tupac and Biggie and things like that. Like it was almost full blown civil war. It's fucking crazy.
One of my favorite conspiracies is that fucking Tupac and Diddy were boys, and fucking Suge Knight didn't like that very much and had Tupac killed because of it. It's
I mean, one of the other...
This is one of those situations where, like, you can joke about this or the wacky Diddy conspiracies, but there's a high chance this is probably true.
Oh, with Suge Knight, I mean, if you go into the Tupac Biggie conspiracies, Suge Knight gets brought up all the time. Because, you know, he had the motive, the means, the opportunity. He was running dogfights in his fucking office. The theory that he gave Eazy-E HIV and things like that. Like it's insane. And, you know, I think we should look into maybe Diddy ordering some hits on Tupac and Biggie. You don't know. I mean, that was my first thought when all this broke down, is what the fuck does Suge Knight think? Because Suge Knight's in prison right now. He broke the 3-strike law of California and is now probably going to die in prison because he killed that guy in a burger joint parking lot. So, yeah.
It does rule how, like, We've joked about this before, but when you get to like a certain level of wealth, you just go crazy. Like, I like to imagine that might have happened to Tupac if he reached a certain level of wealth. His life was cut, unfortunately, too short.
Yeah.
Diddy is interesting. He would occasionally nod and wink to the audience that he's had people killed, and then it's like he's just revealed that he's actually done that, and it's only now we're doing something about it.
Yeah, no. I know. Ashton Kutcher right now is getting looked into because he says he's like he's my BFF, which. You know, bad in hindsight. And I actually believe there's credence to that, considering he like publicly defended Danny Masterson, who's now serving 30 to life in prison for rape now. So I think we need to look into. I feel like that's probably why Topher Grace went mad. Everyone on the set of that 70s show is just evil. That's why he just like lives at home re-editing fucking Star Wars movies in his spare time.
Shout out to Topher Grace for making the Star Wars prequels actually watchable.
Well, he did the best he could with what he had to work with, you know.
Bye.
Yeah, but I think we'll update the Diddy story as it goes. This is nowhere near over, but some fun little things I imagine will be coming in the future. Because this isn't going away. I imagine a lot of people in the music industry would love for this to go away, but like with Jeffrey Epstein, you know, it's just going to haunt over them like a fucking dark cloud. He ends up just staying in the Bahamas and just kind of like living like a Pol Pot lifestyle where he's just in legal limbo, unable to be prosecuted.
I can imagine he's like a baby Dr. Valley after he goes into exile and just becomes like the dictator of his own private island. If the President Diddy, he has his own like sovereign island with no extradition laws. Sorry.
Yeah, but it's just so fucking. Yeah, we'll update this if anything comes the way. But
Yeah. I kind
until.
of hope that Elon Musk goes this route. Like he's having his own heated gaming moment just now.
Oh, so this dropped yesterday. We're recording this on Tuesday, and I'm very happy. I had to. Elon Musk, for those who don't know, I think we've done a bit of Elon coverage, but we tend to not do much of it because so much shit happens that we would just have to make this whole new segment the Elon Musk Hour. So I only tend to cover him when something genuinely juicy or funny happens, like his meltdown at the fucking New York Times event.
Go f yourself.
For this got kind of lost in the shuffle of all the chaos, but he slandered a 22-year-old Jewish guy on Twitter, calling him a neo-Nazi. There was a fight at an Antifa Proud Boys rally, and Elon Musk said he was a Nazi and slandered him. And so this guy is suing Elon Musk, and the guy who took the case is Mark Bankston. He was one of the lawyers on who sued Alex Jones. He wasn't the one who got the billion-dollar settlement. He was the one in Texas who got the $58 million settlement. But yeah, this guy. Is pretty fucking smart if you've ever seen his Alex Jones deposition, because he just kind of lets these guys walk into their own bullshit. He's like a Louis Theroux type where he just lets these guys dig their own grave at a certain point. And he had Elon Musk come in for a deposition. And I have the deposition here. It's over 100 pages. I'm going to link it because it's the whole thing's worth a fucking read. But it did not go well. To the point where Musk tried to get this thing sealed, but the court said, "No, this content's too fucking funny. We're making this public." And it's bad. It's a bad look.
I remember the story was like, we both got shit canned from Twitter around about the same time, and this was like one of the last big stories, I'd say from like a year ago now. I remember actually watching this play out in real time and just seeing these fucking like this deposition PDF. He has to burn our accounts. That would surprisingly get like top comments and Musk's own fucking like replies and shit. And it's like,
Yeah.
okay, dude.
The reason there's two burners, but the burner that is in question is the one where I think it's Aaron Musk. It's named after his like 3-year-old son, and there was pretty damn good circumstantial evidence about this being him. But then you know he straight up admits to this deposition. Yeah, I tweeted under that account, and you know to hear him actually admit that, or at least to read him actually admit that, is surreal. Just to come out and just say, yeah, because that tells me he has more than just these two burners. There has to be more, like, that fucking Doge designer thing that I keep seeing screen caps of has to be him as well.
If I didn't know who, like, Wall Street Silver was, I just assumed that was him as well. But fucking, you're posting privileges to get revoked if you're doing that shit. If you're, like, making your own burner accounts to, like, agree with yourself in your own fucking comments.
I think YouTube actually bans people who do that.
Yeah. That was like a very early like YouTube thing. If you wanted to like boost your channel, you could make 100 burner accounts and like post like positive comments in the comments section, whereas now you cannot do that. That's a thing that's like only limited to Twitter.
Yeah, well, because there's no rules. It's all Nazis on there now. It's like 4chan, but at least 4chan has like areas where it's not all just Nazi shit.
The Star Wars prequels are big on there for some reason, especially Revenge of the Sith. That's like a big fucking, like, still to this day, like a massive meme on there. Whereas Twitter now is like, it's all the Nazi shit without like any of the actual fun.
Yeah, this deposition, there's some good nuggets in here. My favorite is he seems to imply there's a conspiracy between the lawyer. Like, you're actually suing me, this guy isn't real. And it leads to a wild back and forth where he's just talking about, like, do you understand why this guy is suing you? And Musk either doesn't understand or won't understand, won't admit it. It's this in the Don Lemon interview makes me like, I want more interviews with Musk, not because we're going to get anything interesting out of them, but because this guy seems barely mentally stable. This guy feels like he's like one bad day away from just having a complete breakdown and just doing something that he can't take back.
We've talked about this before, but he's been like pretty much insulated from consequences for his entire life, like right up until now. He had a fucking cameo in The Simpsons a few years ago, so he was darling of the media because Wall Street thought that like his dumb electric cars were going to solve climate change. Now everyone sees him for what he is. He reminds me of like Jordan Peterson in a way, because like every time I see Musk now, he looks like he's on the verge of tears by getting answered like basic questions. Why do you believe the things you believe, or why does like everything you fucking like touch turn to shit?
I don't know if it's the drugs or he was always like this, but it is so like, and
he was probably always like this. There's a story from when he was a teenager in high school. He made fun of some kid, like their parent had just died, and he had made fun of them, and the kid threw him down a flight of stairs. And even Musk's dad was like, "Yeah, he deserves that. I'm not gonna be pressing charges against this kid." Even back then, like Musk was a fucking voracious little shit. Literally nothing has changed apart from his wealth.
It's one of those things where it's like, I don't know what it's going to take, because he has been like slowly self-destructing for over a year now. He bought Twitter, like, we didn't officially take it over until like, I think March of last year, right when you and I got nuked. And
yeah,
it's lost like 80% of its value. And
yeah, and the deposition, he openly admits that his tweets are tanking the fucking like share value of his company.
That's a wild, like, just for him to admit that and then go right on Twitter the next day and do it again. The lack of self-awareness, it's troubling. That's almost as troubling as role-playing as your own son on Twitter, talking about, like, the tweets that account sent are so fucking weird, where it's like, I wish I was old enough to go to nightclubs. It's like, what? But I wonder what it's going to take, because Tesla right now is, the stock's not doing great. Their quarter one this year was really fucking bad, because very few people are going to buy a Tesla now. Like, people who are on the fence of buying a Tesla watch like Elon Musk tweets, they're like, I don't want to give this guy my money. And, you know, you're not going to sell Teslas to like Republicans in the fucking South. You're not going to court that market, because you sell electric cars.
Yeah, no matter how based and epic you are, Republicans think electric cars are gay. The only people who like stop for electric is rich liberals, and you lost them a long fucking time ago.
That's the other reason I compare him to Jordan Peterson. I don't think this is grift. I think this is genuine belief. I think he's had his brain poisoned. Combination of drugs, social media addiction, and just I don't know how this ends. I picture it like the end of The Aviator, where he's just sitting in a room. he's watching like Rick and Morty or something on a loop, jars of piss around him, and he just have like I don't know, fucking all his guys out in the front door. You want to come out, Mr. Musk? And he's just sitting there. Just if you remember that scene from The Aviator where he is just fucking mentally gone now.
I'm not a Freud enthusiast by any means. But yeah, Freud vindicated just by like looking at Musk's his like toddler, like he's making a fucking burner account. Whenever people make burner accounts, I remember there's this very infamous Facebook one of a guy made a burner account, and it's like a white guy in the fucking profile picture, and it's like, as a gay as a black gay Republican, I completely denounce Barack Obama.
I remember.
And the
this.
Entire replies is like, yeah, you forgot as much burner accounts did.
I remember this one. That one was more funny than this is. This is troubling. Like, you bring up the Freud comparison. I have to wonder what it's going to take for Tesla board or Tesla investors to fire him. Because I feel like that's coming. Like, no matter how much your cult of personality is, these people want to make money. And if they're not making money, you become very useless to them very quickly.
Yeah, he's very much Count Dooku at the start of Revenge of the Sith. He's outlived his usefulness now. And he's about to get decapitated by fucking by some Tesla shareholder. Tesla is very much like one of those weird banking clan. It's very much like the Trade Federation. It starts off as this like business everyone's involved in, but because it's being run by this fucking this moron, everyone starts to turn on it, and it's doing like very stupid things politically, like invading like whole planets and stuff.
I would say it's more like Omni Consumer Products from RoboCop, where it's just this company that's just like, on the surface it's like, we love electric cars, meanwhile its owner is like, drugs, pussy, and murder, that's what we sell. Like, he's a less competent Ronnie Cox from RoboCop. That's how I view him.
Musk is gonna stick his brain in a fucking like his own robo cane and go on a fucking killing spree until someone shots him down. That's the end of the Musk plotline.
I mean, Neuralink seems like we're halfway there already. fuck. It's so funny. He loves cyberpunk, and yet he seems to be unwilling to admit he's the villain from every cyberpunk movie.
Cyberpunk stuff isn't supposed to be aspirational, dude.
No.
You're not supposed to be sticking fucking people's consciousness into computers. That's not a thing you're supposed to be aiming for.
The thing about Detroit and RoboCop is it's not supposed to be a place you want to live. It's not supposed to be a future you look forward to.
Are you happy with the way it all came out?
Yeah, actually, I'm very happy. Yeah, I'm very pleased with the whole thing.
But most film critics hated episodes 1 and 2.
Misa back!
No again, Zsa. Do something big doo-doo this time.
How worried are you that the critics are not going to like this new movie?
Oh, I'm not worried at all. They haven't liked any of them, really. And they especially haven't liked the last two. So,
well, exactly.
Hey, it can't get any worse.
Speaking of weird politics, it's prequel time. Everyone loves the prequels now for some reason. Oh. Yeah, I remember when the prequels first came out, everyone was very excited. I was very excited as a young, misguided boy. I was like 6 when Phantom Menace came out. I remember watching it in the cinema day one. And even then, as a kid, something's wrong here. Something's wrong. What the fuck is this?
Also, as we did our last episode, I brought up the fact that, like, Lucas is in control. There's no Irvin Kershner. There's no Lawrence Kasdan to guide this beast. It's entirely him to myself watching, particularly the Phantom Menace again, because that was the first major one. You know, people bring up, like, Kevin Feige and Joss Whedon as the destroyers of cinema. I think Lucas deserves to be in that fucking slot as them.
Every, like, bad thing you can say about the MCU, like, stilted acting, fucking CGI overload, fucking Star Wars prequels.
It really does. The idea, especially, like, when he made this film, when he was selling The Phantom Menace, it was this, like, we made the whole thing in a computer. Isn't that awesome? And, like, you look at the behind the scenes of this movie, and it's all, like, young Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson in front of blue screens, and at the time that was cool. But now, like, you look at like the promo shots from a Marvel movie, and you see that template. We did Avatar 2. Say what you want. Like, at least Cameron like tries to integrate practical stuff into that movie, where Lucas, the entire thing is just computers. And that's the big problem when you make a movie entirely with computers, is that after a certain point, it doesn't tend to age well. Because some of the effects in this film, you can polish it up with as many re-edits as you want, it still looks like total shit.
Really, the only difference between like then and now is whereas back then, like, yeah, just watching The Phantom Menace again, like, all the underwater shit. You have the money, like, couldn't you have, like, built a fucking set or something? He's openly admitted to this, but he had such a fucking bad time with all those practical sets and people banging their heads off them. Yeah, fuck it, I'm just going to use computers. All the problems that come with, like running and maintaining practical sets, all that, just, you don't have to think about that if you're using a fucking computer.
That continues my critique from the first episode, that I don't think Lucas is a good director, because an actual skilled director doesn't have problems with this. You look at something like Jurassic Park, which was made like 6 years before this film. And, you know, for as tough as that shoot was, Spielberg still kept his cool and still put together a genuinely compelling movie. And the lack of, and there's like 60 CGI shots in Jurassic Park. It's a very, like, the CGI is used very sparingly, whereas this entire movie is just like, I would love to know the VFX count of this movie, because I feel like it's huge. I feel like it's over 1,000 shots. You know, again, for 1999, this is a genuinely impressive feat, but then this is not a movie that I think really stands the test of time. Like, for the original, for as flawed as it is, still has that charm of practical puppetry and shit, and that this has none of that. It is all just sickly gross green screen shit. Oh, God.
Yeah, it doesn't help that you have, like, either very young or very old actors acting against this stuff. And the acting here is very weird. Like, yeah. Very, very weird.
So, we may as well get into, The Phantom Menace. The hype around this film was so... one of my favorite things about The Phantom Menace is there is a documentary you can watch about the making of this movie, where Lucas is trying to justify Jar Jar Binks. I will post this in the... It is hilarious.
Jar Jar is a key to all this. If we get Jar Jar working, because he's a funnier character than we've ever had in any of the movies before. Well,
it all leads up to the first night screening at Skywalker Ranch, and you get to watch George Lucas, like, sit there and realize, oh, I fucked up.
Seems like a lot of short scenes.
It's bold in terms of jerking people around, but... I may have gone too far in a few places.
In a space of about 90 seconds, you know, you go from lamenting the death of, you know, a hero, to escape, to slightly comedic with Jar Jar, you know, to Anakin returning with his little kind of tag. It's a lot, it's a very short time.
Boggles the mind.
Sitting in there.
Yeah.
No, I know.
And it starts opening. You don't know what the hell.
I do a particular kind of movie, which this is consistent, but it is a very hard movie to follow. And at the same time, I've done it a little more extremely than I've ever done in the past. It's stylistically designed to be that way, and you can't undo that. But we can diminish the effects of it. We can slow it down a little bit so that if it's intense for us...
Yeah, we don't know what
to keep. You know, a regular person's gonna go nuts.
Just watching this guy's hopes and dreams get crushed. And it's the same with, like, the fan reaction, too. Go watch
it. Yeah.
Just watching this guy's hopes and dreams get crushed. And it's the same with, like, the fan reaction, too. Go watch the opening night videos of people going to see this movie in costume and them walking out just pissed off and angry. It's so...
If you're a Star Wars fan, you have, like, certain expectations of what that film would look like. And Phantom Menace, it has all the Star Wars stuff in it, but it's so, like, bizarre. Well, like, the politics of that first movie, it was very, it wasn't complicated. It was World War II in space. It was, you know, the Allies versus space Nazis. Whereas in this, the opening of Phantom Menace. It's like your two Jedi heroes are going to sort some like trade dispute.
It's one of those things, yeah, and like the whole thing about the plot as well. It's like there's a plot about the alien guys wanting to avoid paying taxes, and there's so much political jargon in this fucking movie. Like, that's the thing about this film. Like, the pacing will stop dead in its tracks, and we can have a scene where Natalie Portman is talking about politics with, like, all the people on the fucking planet. This film is, like, what people complain about, like, politics. There's too much politics in this movie. Like, no, like, it has nothing, like, every film can be political, but this film has no pacing. It just stops dead in its fucking tracks to spiel about this. And it is so funny, especially like this film getting made in like assuming like 1997, 1998, like just near the end of the Clinton administration, because there is a lot of like Clinton era politics to this movie. Like it's still kind of like the remnants of that, I feel.
Yeah, this is the end of history. Watching this movie is kind of like watching C-SPAN. There's like honestly, like there's like entire scenes of they're in the fucking like Republic Senate and they're debating whether or not to like impose trade sanctions. The fucking Trade Federation has a seat on the Republic Senate. It'd be like a fucking McDonald's had a senator. That's what's so baffling about this movie. Slavoj Žižek said this, but it's not much of a republic if it has queens as senators.
No. And every now and then, like, the Star Wars stuff happens. And it feels like two different scripts that have just been... Like, Lucas was writing, like, a political drama or something. And then realized, like, oh, fuck, I was supposed to write a Star Wars movie. And even the actual, like, Star Wars stuff is really fucking lame in this movie. Like, you have...
Yeah, remember when the Force was, like, this weird quasi-mystical thing? Whereas here it's AIDS... Like, if you have space AIDS, that gives you, like, superpowers or something.
It's HIV. It's literally HIV positive. Yeah. But that's the thing is, like, and, you know, God bless Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson. They are trying their best. Liam Neeson is trying his fucking best to salvage the script. Like, I can't even imagine him, like, doing this, thinking, like, I was just in Schindler's List. I was directed by an actual filmmaker, and here I am. Having to read off the line midichlorians with a straight fucking face. It's insane.
Well, if you look at that behind the scenes documentary, Ewan McGregor, he's very fresh-faced, straight out of fucking Trainspotting. He's very excited because it's Star Wars. Everyone wants Star Wars, right? Then come the documentary for Revenge of the Sith. He's very much like, oh yeah, Star Wars.
He's grown a goatee. That's how brutal this took. By the way, that will be a running theme in the next episode too. These people get on these projects, they're excited. The same with Natalie Portman and Hayden Christensen. They're all just like, you can see the soul just leave their eyes the further it goes through. Because this was like, I think these were shot, I don't know if they were shot like back to back, but the productions were pretty close to each other. Like, right after Phantom Menace was released, like Attack of the Clones began production. It was a pretty hectic fucking shoot.
Yeah, for these three movies, they all released within like a 4-year, like within 4 years from 1999 to 2003. And that's kind of unprecedented now. Whenever like a trilogy would get announced, like Dune, for instance, Dune 1 was fucking 3 years ago and Dune 2 just came out, so usually there's like a pretty big gap if you're doing like a sequel, whereas Star Wars it's just like, yeah, just like back-to-back Star Wars.
Well, it all comes down to planning, you know. Like Lord of the Rings, that whole production was one go. Like it was like a year straight of filming. Everyone worked on all those movies at once, and that's why they were able to release within a year of each other. And Star Wars is kind of like that. But yeah, that leads to a very hectic shoot. And especially, like, takes a toll. And especially Ewan McGregor. I think Ewan McGregor is probably the best thing about these prequels. His performance, even though it's not a good performance. But he is trying his best. In between this, he does like Moulin Rouge and right after this movie, he does Moulin Rouge and then he does Black Hawk Down. I think he needed a bit of a fucking palate cleanser after this. Let me go work with Baz Luhrmann and then Ridley Scott.
I would literally rather see Baz Luhrmann's Star Wars than ever rewatch any of the fucking... That's what's so funny about these the original movies is this three very different directors, whereas here it's all George Lucas. It's all Lucas all the time, and you get some very weird shit out of that.
Oh, I mean, this one in particular, there's so much weird shit in this. The character of Darth Maul feels like an afterthought completely. Like, literally, he just feels like he's just there. For a character that's like, you know, he gets a lot of pull in the cartoons, and Dave Filoni loves him, but he's barely in this movie. He has that scene where he's talking to the Emperor where it's just, they do, like, that's kind of like one of the funniest reasons, like the plot twist in the third film where he's the Emperor, but it's clearly like,
yeah, surprise.
They weren't even hiding that shit. But, you know, he barely gets anything to do. He has like that scene in the desert where he fights Liam Neeson. He's gone for most of the movie, and then like the last...
That gave me... I fucking hate these movies, but there's a lot of very good memes from them. That fight scene is one of my favorites. It's like a parody of those Facebook boomer memes of like and share. It's like for Jesus versus Satan, like if you prefer Jesus over Satan or something. And it's just both their fight scenes.
That's fucking great. Yeah, but we didn't even talk about pod racing. That happens in this fucking movie.
Yeah, that's when I first saw that, that's when this movie lost me, the 10-minute fucking pod racing scene.
You know, the character of Watto as well, which I should...
Oh, boy.
We need to bring this up. The character...
Yeah, Watto, 4chan's favorite character.
Yeah, so the character of Jar Jar, which we're not... I'm not even... I refuse to even bring up anything he does in this. Every time he showed up in this film, I closed my eyes and put my hands over my ears like I was a child, like, nah, I don't want to fucking listen to this. The thing about Lucas is that, and this kind of shows up in the originals, we didn't bring that up, but it's like, Lucas is very old school with his racial stereotypes. Like the characters of Jawas, ooh, they steal droids and sell them at a market value. I wonder what that's about.
Even the fucking sand people was like, come on, dude. Who do you think you're fucking kidding here?
He had to rename them like the Tuscan or whatever the fuck they're... Tuscan
Raiders. Yeah, the Tuscan Raiders or something. And
they were originally called the fucking sand people. And it's just like, oh,
yeah,
God.
You were playing with fire in the original movies, whereas here it's like your first alien, like the first aliens you see. Alex Jones bring this up. They're literally like Chinese.
Emperor Palpatine was a little-known senator from Naboo, small planet. He finances terrorists to attack the planet, and then he plays victim and says that the pacifist republic isn't doing enough to help him with the terrorist invasion, the Trade Federation invasion, who even speak in Chinese accents. It's all geopolitical. He then goes and complains and catapults himself in the crisis into the role of chancellor. Because, you know, he was the victim, but now he demanded something be done. He'd been a pacifist previously. Now he's chancellor. Episode 2, launches terror attacks all over the galaxy with groups he's secretly financing through his backers in the Trade Federation. He turns around, double crosses in the end. Lord Vader, kill Viceroy Gunray and everyone else in the...
Man.
Alex Jones's review of this film is perfect. I'm not gonna lie.
Alex Jones seems to be the only one who like at the time understood these movies. When critics talked about these movies when they came out, what does all this shit mean? This is all completely comprehensible. Alex Jones seemed to be the only one that understood the actual politics of those movies.
If I were Lucas, I'd be deeply ashamed of myself if that I would be like, wow. The guy who yells the frogs are gay understands my... That has to be a wake-up call for you as a screenwriter. You're like, whoa, Jesus. But so the character of Watto is just a Jew. Let's be honest with ourselves.
He looks like a fucking Durstumer cartoon, but he's also like this money-grubbing tradesman that has actual fucking boy slaves under him.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, dude.
And, yeah, and the only reason the pod racing scene exists is, A, the film is like, all right, it's been like 45 minutes and nothing's happened. It's just shitty comic relief and bad stereotypes. We gotta throw in a But even then, like, even during the pod race scene, there's fucking fart jokes, and there's goddamn, like, that character that, like...
This is also the, like, grand introduction of our main character.
Oh, poor Jake Lloyd. Jesus. He's the real tragedy of all of this. We've talked about him on our Nostalgia Critic episode, because he got a lot of shit for this movie. A lot of it undeserved, because it's not his fucking fault. If an Oscar-winning actor can't read this dialogue properly, what the fuck is a 10-year-old going to do?
He did, like, drink all the way before this. He was, like, a like, somewhat prominent child actor. This is, like, his last movie.
Yeah.
The fucking, like, psychic trauma he got from this movie was like, yeah, fuck it.
It's sad. I talked to you about that interview and, like, 2014. I hope he's okay now, but like I saw his
interview. He's fine now. He does conventions because Disney gave him a bunch of like therapy money to like try and get his life back on track. He's fine now. If you see like photos of him now, he's like he's reconciled all this and he's actually doing better now, which it's fucking good on him, man.
Yeah, because I remember seeing this interview like 2014, and it's the most I felt like I wanted to start crying watching this thing. It was so sad. It's like, and that'll be especially funny when we get to the next episode. The fan base learns nothing from this.
The Anakin Skywalker is both in lore and IRL, like the most bullied character of all time. That's what's so funny about the like overall plot of these movies. Lucas himself says in the behind the scenes of Phantom Menace, because it's so plot driven, you can't take out scenes in editing.
I mean, I've thought about this quite a bit, and the tricky part is you almost can't take any of those pieces out of there now. Because each one kind of
takes
you to the next place, and you can't jump. You don't know where you are.
But you can, like, quote-unquote diminish the effects of them. But they're also, like, super coincidence-driven. So if Qui-Gon and his crew don't land in Tatooine, does Anakin not get to be the chosen one?
I thought about that recently, and I just started laughing because it's like, yeah, just, all right, just if we land somewhere else, is there another kid? Like, is this a prophecy via vibes? That's kind of the joke, though, is that, like, Lucas's writing always gets made fun of. Because, yeah, that's everything has to be coincidence. Nothing could just happen naturally. Like, randomly, we're just in the hut. They're just getting food and shit. And then they meet, like, naked C-3PO, which...
I fucking hate that Darth Vader made C-3PO. Not only is everything, like, coincidence driven, everything is so fucking, like, small as well. Every fucking character knows each other. Every, like, one thing has to lead to another thing. That's what's so frustrating about these. You're doing the Star Wars prequels. You can literally do, like, whatever the fuck you want, and you're doing this shit.
Well, it's like bad screenwriting 101, where the whole scene is like two characters are just like, rather than have a natural conversation, are just spouting plot exposition at each other. It's like, this will happen later, and then look at the audience kind of thing. Like when Liam Neeson says, you have midichlorians in you, son. He may as well look at the fucking audience when he does it. This obsession with like, you know, continuity and stuff, it can't really... And this will be even worse in the sequel trilogy, where things can't really breathe and be their own thing. Because that's the thing about Star Wars, and that's kind of the end, like, the tragedy of, like, these 9 movies. They're all ball and chain to each other in a way where they can't, like, go out and do their own thing. Even when a radical maniac comes in and tries to do that, he still can't go away from the basic formula.
I like to imagine the life Anakin could have had if he wasn't spirited away by Liam Neeson. He probably wouldn't have a good life. No. He'd still be the slave of this, like, floating Jewish caricature. But I can imagine it's, like, a lot fucking better than going on to become fucking Darth Vader, this asthmatic robot. Being Darth Vader is probably, like, one of the worst things that could happen to you. Like, you're either stuck in some, like, incredibly stiff robot body, or you're stuck floating in a fucking, like, bathtub That's, yeah, that's the only time where you're not like, you're, your body's searing in pain.
If they did make a movie about Anakin's life, if he wasn't Darth Vader, it would be directed by Mike Lee and not George Lucas. It would be like Naked, where it's just him running around, yeah, Tatooine, fucking, just fucking screaming nihilism at people.
Yeah, he's David Thewlis, fucking, man.
Pod racing scene happens, and it's just, I literally don't remember anything that happened in it. It's like, it just noise. Other than Jabba the Hutt shows up for a quick cameo.
Hell yeah. Like,
remember the good movie that we watched last time when that guy was a... I love how progressively Jabba the Hutt becomes less of a scary serial rapist murderer and is now just a fucking cartoon character.
Yeah, he's literally just a cartoon. He's a glorified cameo in this. It's like, yeah, okay, dude. That's what's so weird about, like, the whole concept of doing like Star Wars prequels in general. When you get to the next movie, we can't just do Boba Fett. We need to like, but we need a Boba Fett without actually doing Boba Fett. So let's just like do his fucking dad and give him the exact same like aesthetic and armor and shit.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I mean, before we get into the next movie, this movie kind of, it doesn't redeem itself, but the last 30 minutes is fairly watchable, I'd say, because you've got a pretty great fucking sword fight, double, you know, two-on-one sword fight. John Williams' music fucking carries the hell out of that.
Yeah, he salvages these movies. He's the fucking MVP of this series.
Puppet Yoda as well, which as weird as Puppet Yoda looks, enjoy it, because it's gonna get worse from here.
Like, the entire third act of this movie is like, it's four different action set pieces.
Pretty much.
You have your like, you have your comedy Jar Jar shit, you've got your space shit, that's like literally the only reason why we see fucking like young Jake Lloyd flying through space is because of that fucking like one line of dialogue in the original movies. Oh yeah, Anakin Skywalker, great pilot. And it's like,
Then
we have two-on-one fight scene between Jesus, one of his disciples, and the devil. Darth Maul is literally just the devil in this. It's like George Lucas. There's this fucking great interview with Peter Serafinowicz.
They recorded it in a studio over here that was notoriously quite a cheap studio, you know? and I remember thinking, oh, wow, they're recording here. Oh, okay, well, anyway. And then I went in and there's George Lucas and it was just so incredibly exciting. And then I went into the booth. And what usually happens when you record a voiceover is the producer and the director and everybody and the sound engineer, they all sit outside with the desk and they can hear everything through the speakers. But George came into the booth with me and sat behind me. And it was really unsettling, you know. I said to George, as I called him, how do you want me to do this? What direction can you give me? And he said, just make him evil. Just make him sound real evil. All right, okay.
I love Peter Sedovitz so much. Yeah, great. Great in Shaun of the Dead. Huge Dark Souls fan. He's fucking awesome. I think there's another set piece as well. The, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, the fucking, Natalie Portman has to bring down the evil Japanese aliens.
Oh.
Who appeared in the next movie for some reason.
Yeah,
and it's like, didn't you go to space jail after trying to take over the fucking planet?
Yeah, that's another racial thing. He made all the Japanese people aliens.
I wonder if that's a commentary on anything.
That was a huge thing of like the late 90s as well. There's Rising Sun. The Rising Sun,
Robocop 3, a whole bunch of folk evil Japan movies.
The Hunted with Christopher Lambert and shit like that. But yeah, yeah, that exists, by the way. This movie fucking sucks. I hate this movie. And then the other one happened and I actually missed fucking... It made, yeah, Attack of the Clones.
I actively pined for Darth Maul fucking halfway through this movie.
Oh, God. You know, you texted me that. And yeah, this is up there. If I were to do 100 worst films ever made list, this would be on there. I wouldn't even hesitate. Yeah, so Attack of the Clones 2002. This might be the worst one. We're going to have this discussion when we get into Rise of Skywalker, because those are both like the I think unanimously the fan base hates all both these movies equally, but it comes down to cynicism versus sincerity, and we'll get down to that discussion when we do, but this movie's fucking awful. There's no defense for this. This movie sucks ass.
Oh, the bad shit we just said about Phantom Menace is like somehow it's more ramped up in this. Like, you've got fucking veteran actor Christopher Lee, and he's spouting this jargon.
What if I told you that the Republic was now under the control of the Dark Lord of the Sith?
No, that's not possible. The Jedi would be aware of it.
The dark side of the Force has clouded their vision, my friend. Hundreds of senators are now under the influence of a Sith Lord called Darth Sidious. The Viceroy of the Trade Federation was once in league with this Darth Sidious. But he was betrayed 10 years ago by the Dark Lord. He came to me for help. He told me everything.
What the fuck are you talking about, man?
He was just in Lord of the Rings at the same time. Think about that shit. Think about the come down you have to feel in that moment. Like, fuck. And to think that same year, Return of the King is going to win every Oscar that year. Yeah, but Chris Lee, honestly, that's the only salvageable thing about this movie, I think, is hearing Christopher Lee read this stuff. You know, Christopher Lee is one of those actors who's, you know, iconic for a reason. He has just one of those, like, screen presences that's no other actor like him has. And he has a voice, even in bad movies, even in, like, his, like, Fu Manchu movies, which I'm going to say right now, Jess Franco would have directed a better Star Wars movie than George Lucas would.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
But, yeah, it is the only reason to watch this is just to hear him read those lines. Because, again, and it's just the proof that I think Lucas is so bad at directing. It's just, you could have a caliber of Christopher Lee read this shit, and he can't sell it. And if Christopher Lee can't sell it, then we're fucked. There's no hope for any of this.
There's like one convincing scene in this, and it's between him and Ewan McGregor, and Christopher Lee's talking about like, oh, the Republic's been infiltrated by this Sith Lord called Darth Sidious.
Oh man.
I sent you this fucking like Tumblr meme recently, and it's like, there's two Star Wars characters, there's Grub Shittle and Stabby McBad Guy. And it's like, I know these movies are made for kids, but fucking like Darth Sidious is just your main fucking bad guy.
I detest the excuse that because this movie's made for kids, you're allowed to half-ass this shit. I detest the fuck out of that, because I've seen movies made for kids that are way more intelligent than this shit is. This movie has one of the weirdest Total Whiplash openings I've experienced for a while. It opens with a brutal political assassination in the rain where they blow up the fucking ship and like she dies, and then hard cut to Anakin complaining that he can't get pussy because he's a fucking Jedi. It's the tone of this movie is somehow more insane than fucking than the Phantom Menace was, because that whole opening on fucking Coruscant where it's like they tried to kill Natalie Portman and then it turns into like a Blade Runner car chase through the neon soaked fucking streets, and there's some cool like visuals here, like some of the production design, particularly that club scene's pretty fucking cool, and then it's ruined by Lucas having an anti-drug PSA in the middle of this fucking chase scene.
I like how the Death Stick guy has his own fucking Wikipedia article that's like a mile long.
That's what I meant.
Because that's another interesting thing about this. Like we'll get into this in depth in part four. Not only do you have the films, you have this like massive influx of expanded media, video games and books and shit. It's fucking like one of my favorite stories is Obsidian. Fresh off the success of like Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights, they were approached to do a Star Wars game, and they had the choice of doing like a tie-in prequel for this or like their own thing. And after they had a fucking screening of this, they were like, "Oh, we'll just do our own thing." So,
oh Oh, that's
that's why we have KOTOR, one of the greatest games of all time.
That was also BioWare as well made that.
That's BioWare.
Yeah, it's BioWare. But BioWare, and you know, they will then...
Oh yeah, Obsidian did the second one. Yeah, BioWare did the first one. This is like that golden age of RPGs. We'll talk about that in depth in the fourth episode.
Casey Hudson, who produced and directed Knights of the Old Republic, will go on to do... two of the Mass Effect games. He will leave at midway production of 3, which that will be its own episode one day. We have a lot to get through, so we'll get to that when we get to it. But yeah, it's so funny because as bad as these movies were, Star Wars Mania at this point in time was at probably the peak. More so than even like before the release of The Force Awakens. You had Republic Commando, which is a pretty solid... first-person shooter. You had, again, Knights of the Old Republic. You had some RTS games here and there. You had, like, a couple of fucking silly books here. Like I said, there was some fun stuff that came from these movies, and it's hilarious when you watch them. You're like, wow, if this didn't have Star Wars name on it, no one would have ever given this the time of day.
Fuck no. I can imagine there's some, like, alternate universe where George Lucas... like take these ideas and try to do something like actually original with it, and just nobody gives a shit. It's kind of like a joke now. The Star Wars used to be this like fucking world boosting behemoth, and the fucking like marketing, I know the product placement around particularly Attack of the Clones, like people joke about like how Star Wars itself isn't really just like a Disney product now. The Star Wars was... it was always a fucking product. I hate saying this, but you really had to fucking be there to see it all.
Yeah, you had to have been like a kid like us who had like their full screen DVDs of this movie before the Disney shit came along and kind of made these movies obsolete. But
I love how DVDs back then, it was like, it was to have like, it'd be marketed as, oh, you can watch this in full screen instead of pan and scan.
Yeah. You want to watch this in like the fucking cropped aspect ratio, or do you want to watch this in like, is as an ad? Like, I've had this where I go like rent from my library and I rent like old DVDs and I'll get home and find out it's full screen. I'm like, fuck, god damn it. Like, yeah, no, but going back to the movie, this movie also has a fucking weird... everyone talks about the relationship between Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman in this movie, and it is weird and creepy and fucked up.
We joked about this behind the scenes of the last episode, but fucking, like, what was it, Anakin's 7 or something in Phantom Menace, and Padme is, like, 15, and they're sort of, like, supposed to be, like, a couple of years in between this movie and the last movie. Freud is fucking is rearing his head here.
I feel bad for Natalie Portman. Between this and The Professional, she unfortunately has to be cast in movies with like very, very creepy underheadings of, for those who've not seen The Professional.
Leon the pedophile was Nick Mullen calls it, very apt.
Nick Mullen's always one of the best film critics of our era. He's the he's Gen Z's Roger Ebert, I would say. but then there's like Hayden Christensen gets a lot of shit, and again, I'm not gonna go too hard because there's only so much you can do with this material, you know.
Yeah, I don't even think fucking Lawrence Olivier would be able to pull off I Hate Sand. It's coarse and rough and it gets everywhere.
Well, I mean, like, the other time he's done like movies before this, he did like Virgin Suicides and Shattered Glass, where he's not great, but he's way better in those than he is here. Again, going back to my theory that Lucas can't direct actors, especially that scene when after they kill his mom, the Tusken Raiders basically rape and kill his mom. He goes out and just slaughters all of them. And then he goes to tell Padme, I killed the women and the children too. And he is like struggling to read this.
I killed them all. They're dead. Every single one of them. They're like animals. And I slaughtered them like animals. I hate them.
Look, what should be a harrowing, scary scene, it just comes across as just completely deflates the minute he starts speaking the dialogue.
And concept should be very harrowing. Like, oh, there's a meme of they essentially got raped to death. And he goes fucking sickle, essentially, like, commits an ethnic cleansing. But just the way it's shot. There's one type of shot in this fucking shot, reverse shot. And again, if you see the fucking behind the scenes, it's just like, Lucas has these fucking like very basic camera setups, yeah. So he doesn't have to get out of his fucking chair, and it's like, right, we film the scene, move on.
I mean, yeah. David Tatersill, who shot this, he shot The Green Mile, Con Air, you know, he's a fucking like real cinematographer, and very basic, very like static cameras, shot, reverse shot. And you got to think, if you're Tatersill, like, you know, I just wrapped Con Air. I just, you know, I'm about to go shoot The Green Mile around the same time. And how for a movie that has this much, like, money into it and this much visual effects, how blandly it's fucking filmed. How, like, there's no real style to any of it. It's all just, let's just film it as basic as we can. It's frustrating.
You brought up Avatar 2 earlier. James Cameron spent fucking, like, well over a decade to try and make an entirely CGI movie actually look interesting.
Yeah.
Whereas Lucas is like, do everything in post, have like, there are sets in this, but they're like very, very small. How do you even fucking light that shit? How do you even like try to approach filming this like entirely CG fucking there?
Right, by the way, right after Anakin announces he's murdered everyone, we go to a wacky action set piece with Droid Factory, which again, there is no pacing in any of these movies. It just goes from harrowing what is supposed to be a very dark scene to comedy set piece. It's insane.
Yeah. I fucking hate that George Lucas, the chronic boomer that he is, has to have a fucking 50s diner sequence as well.
Oh,
like, we're on fucking Coruscant, the home world of the Republic. These like grand fucking skyscrapers and flying cars. We have to have our fucking old timey diner.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, man.
The guy who's clearly modeled after like Greek stereotypes.
It's Stavros's dad.
Yeah, that's, he may as well have like, if he were human, he'd have a hairy chest and a fucking gold chain or something. Oh my god. That guy has like a wiki page too, that's a mile and a fucking half long.
Everyone has a fucking wiki page. That's what's so fun about the fandom of this movie, is they get like not only like very protective, but their obsession with coming up with all this like elaborate backstories for characters that are only like on screen for 30 seconds. Like, you talked about fucking Walrus Man last time.
Yeah, that was the original example, and now it's just everyone is doing it gets worse over time, especially but yeah, obviously we have the big gladiator set piece, which is awful.
So we've got Boba Fett at home, gets owned, and so, yeah, Jango Fett, he's this proud like Mandalorian bounty hunter, everyone's scared of him, and he just gets owned instantly by Sam Jackson.
Jackson is another saving grace of these movies. You have the John Williams score. Sam Jackson, my favorite story is Sam Jackson would have only done this
wanted his own purple lightsaber. Yeah.
I mean, because Sam Jackson's like one of those guys who, he's been in genuinely god-awful movies, and he'll still like put together he'll throw in a pretty solid performance. You put him in something as shitty as The Hitman's Bodyguard, he'll still try to make it his own. He's had his experience in bad movies, and he's bringing that here whole hog.
Mace Windu is by far one of the more memorable characters in these movies. Not really because of like the actual character, because it's just Sam Jackson with a lightsaber.
No, that's the thing. It's not really a character so much as it is, it's Samuel Jackson. That's most of Samuel Jackson's roles now. I feel like it's just be yourself in any movie.
Yeah,
you
fuck
do.
It.
But I mean, yeah, the
yeah.
Big bad.
That's what's so fascinating about like Mace Windu as a character is Sam Jackson's known for like very over the top Tarantino shit. Here he has to play a very wise, very stoic Jedi master. He goes sicko mode in episode 3.
That is
great. And that's like he goes Phil Jackson, but apart from that he's like very
very
like down to earth and stuff. It's like
it's just a terrible fucking action set beat. Again, it's just like they bring out the three different monsters, and again, the fucking Ewan McGregor saying quips, and I noticed the quips in this film get a lot more cynical.
Yeah.
Like, it is very much like, fuck this shit, I can't believe it. You can start to see the apathy begin to grow, and it's fully there when we get to episode three, but yeah, and then there's that shot where, like, they're blowing up the fucking Coliseum, and Christopher Lee's like, I will take the plans to Darth Sidious, and that will never not make me laugh. But it's just the Death Star. It's just a little thing. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to get all the boomers in the audience like, ooh, like that's their...
Yeah, it is. I can imagine if, like, the Beyond Fried Chicken soy pointing at the screen was a thing back then. You would literally have audience people doing that, like, oh my god, it's the Death Star, doing the Death Star again.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, yeah, it's...
We'll bring this up in the next episode of, like, oh, we're doing the Death Star again, really, but even in the prequels, it's like, oh, we're doing the Death Star again.
This shit was acrid and nasty, like, even in 2003. So I can't imagine this shit, like, fucking 13 years later, but yeah. And then there's obviously a big fight where Christopher Lee cuts Anakin's arm off. That's a running theme in all of these movies. Someone loses an arm in one of these films.
Yeah,
I think the only one that doesn't happen is Phantom Menace. It's just Darth Maul loses his entire fucking bottom half.
As well as himself to live through raw hatred. Yeah, we get a very awful fight scene between Christopher Lee and fucking cartoon Yoda.
I was so embarrassed watching this because as a kid I thought this was the coolest shit ever. And now as a grown man I'm like, this sucks. This is awful.
Yeah, just get to the end, get to the fucking roll credits. Like, this is fucking movie, embarrassing.
And then I wrote in my notes here right after that fight, this movie is crawling like a wounded soldier to the finish line.
Yeah.
And then the dumbest line, the Clone Wars began. For fuck's sake.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Again, the only reason why we're doing the Clone Wars is one line of dialogue from that first movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Dave Filoni. He'll make that a cartoon show about it and shit. And...
Oh yeah, that was Dave Filoni. I mentioned this a few seconds ago. Another another good byproduct of this is the Clone Wars TV
it
show.
That's like good. It is. I will not lie. It's better than anything we've watched for this program right now.
Yeah, it takes the concepts that we've just shat on for the last half an hour and actually does something interesting with them. And yeah, there's some dumb bullshit like, oh, Darth Maul is back, but. At least it's fun.
Yeah.
At least there's some fun shit. It also has one of my favorite bad guy names. So Darth Maul has a brother called fucking Sebastian Press. man.
That's the thing about Star Wars. No matter how hard you try, no matter who you bring in, you have to dig into George Lucas's cookie jar. And it's never good. It's never fucking good.
Yeah, that's...
No matter...
I think episode 3 is probably the worst example of that.
Oh, yeah. So, I actually like this movie, I think, more than you did. We'll get into it. But yeah, this is the Star Wars movie. I talked about in the first episode, you get to watch Lucas grow as a director. And now we have to remember when he made the first Star Wars film, he was a young, you know, child of the 70s, hippie nerd, went out to Vietnam protests. And when he made The Phantom Menace, like, this is the end of the Clinton administration. And Revenge of the Sith is 2005. The second Bush administration has begun. And I have a suspicion that Lucas got really doomer-pilled making this movie. This is easily the darkest of all 9 of these movies, I think. Like, especially in the second half when it is just full-blown just genocide on film.
The fucking Emperor Palpatine gifting himself emergency powers to build this fucking clone army is probably the most unsubtle metaphor for the patriarch you can get. George Lucas, around about the same time as this, like, openly admitted... this is how he explains politics to kids.
You know, it's hard for people to realize, and I'm not supposed to say this, and I wasn't supposed to say it then, but, you know, it's a film for 12-year-olds. it was designed to be a film like mythology of this is what we stand for. You're about to enter the real world. You're 12 years old. You're going to go on into the big world. You're moving away from your parents being the center focus. You're probably scared. You don't know what's going to happen. And here's a little idea of some of the things you should pay attention to.
How you explain to kids on how a democracy turns into a dictatorship. So this is like, yeah, the fucking the Clone Wars is just the Iraq War.
I'm not sure.
There's a lot of like...
I'm not sure that's what I got from this, but okay, George, sure.
Alex Jones did.
Because I'm like, that is not what I got from that, but okay. Like, that's the... Every time I try to read a quote about Lucas, I'm like, that's the dumbest shit I've had to say out loud for this show in a while. But this is a very different movie. There is a lot of stupid shit in the first third of this. There's a lot of the dumb comedic shit we've come to expect. But around the halfway point of this movie, it turns. And it doesn't look back. It round about the time when Samuel Jackson comes to arrest the Emperor and Ian McDill. I fucking love Ian McDill's performance in this fucking movie. He steals this entire movie. He's been a background character for a good chunk of these movies. But he is front and center here, and he fucking owns it, man. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's the only one who's able to, like, make this incredibly dumb fucking dialogue, at least, like, somewhat tenable. The whole fucking Darth Plagueis speech is a meme now. Just the way he delivers that dialogue, it's like, man, you're by far the fucking best thing about this movie.
I think the reason is he knows, he unlike everyone else, knows this is stupid kid shit. And he's like a classically trained Shakespearean actor. He was a stage actor. You know, he used to do Shakespeare stuff. And he is fully on board with, I'm playing a cartoon villain. And he plays it like a cartoon villain. And he just makes it work. Although I will admit, no matter how solid that scene is, Darth Plagueis, I still laugh. Because I've just been irony poisoned by all those fucking
movies.
It's so...
There is a noticeable difference between like theater acting and movie acting. And Ian McDiarmid really hammers this home when he's having the fucking back and forth with Sam Jackson.
Are you threatening me, Master Jedi?
The Senate will decide your fate.
I am the Senate.
Not yet.
It's like very clear, like the differences in acting here.
Yeah, no, just the Sam Jackson, just that line that I love when he pulls the lightsaber out. It's treason then.
And then he
fucking like does a goblin hop. And, like, he's doing crazy shit. I love this fight scene. And then Sam Jackson kicks the shit out of him. And then Anakin kills him. And then probably the line that made me laugh my ass off is when Hayden Christensen yells,
"What have I done?"
And then suddenly, you know, Ian McDiarmid looks like fucking an old man now.
Yeah, he drops the facade and just becomes a fucking monster, man. It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
That's what's so interesting between, like, friendly old grandpa Palpatine and the Emperor, vaguely similar characters but also completely different at the same time.
Yeah, no, but and then during all of this they have the character of General Grievous, who's what a stupid character. I know people kind of like him because, you know, he's cool, he's got four arms, but he's a dumb fucking character.
He's another one of those characters like Darth Maul where in the movies, he sucks, but in the expanded media, because he has, like, an actual backstory and shit, yeah, they actually, like, do something interesting with him.
In the Clone Wars TV show, he's legitimately intimidating in that. Like that.
Oh, yeah, he kills, like, fucking 10 Jedi in the space of 5 minutes. He's scary in that show.
Yeah.
Whereas here, he's basically comic relief.
Yeah,
he's, like, wheezing and dropping one-liners and shit.
I didn't know he was not supposed to be a robot, and I thought as a kid, why is a robot coughing, what the fuck? And then
yeah, he's like a pro-Darth Vader. It's very weird.
And then that leads to probably the most memorable scene of any of these movies.
Hello there.
I remember watching clips when that Obi-Wan show came out. Everyone was like, that was the soy boy point at the screen moment.
Yeah, we were waiting for it.
That line has, that's kind of the thing about these movies that I think, Like, there are people who defend these films, but I think a lot of the fandom of this movie comes from those fucking memes. Because these movies are very memeable. There is no denying that. And some of them are legitimately funny.
Unlimited Power is still one of my favorite one-liners. I will just randomly quote that for, like, regardless of context.
Yeah. Again, the tone problems still persist with the fucking, like, like Obi-Wan fighting the general, and then, like, the guy from the original Mad Max, no, not Goose.
Yeah,
Mad
the
Max.
Helicopter guy, he's in this for, like, 30 seconds playing a wacky alien.
And he's got, like, all this makeup. You would not know that was him unless someone brought that up to you. All the stupid shit happens. Obi-Wan's riding a fucking, like, lizard dragon or whatever the fuck that is. And then
it's very interesting how as soon as General Grievous dies, the movie just takes a complete 180 in terms of tone.
Yeah.
This is when we get the fucking Order 66 Patriot Act, when Hayden Christensen genocides a bunch of kids.
I actually, the John Williams score, this is some of John Williams' best work. This score, I have actually listened to this score isolated from time to time, because it's a fucking excellent score, particularly this scene. They're on the snow planet, the guy with the giant fucking beard and penis head is like, come on! And then the soldiers stop, pull their guns, and just gun him down. It's like, there's some stuff here, it's like, man, you know, I feel like this is the film Lucas was, like, waiting his whole life to make, because I really do sense, like, this young guy who is full of hope has had all of that taken from him. Because, I don't know, George Bush became president again, and you get to see that digression. And obviously the scene, the very famous scene where Anakin kills a bunch of children off screen. There's some good shit here. Some visuals and some violence in the second half.
This is I believe, is still the only PG-13 Star Wars movie.
I know the other ones are PG-13. I think the Disney films.
Right. At the time, this was, like, the first PG-13 movie. Yeah, watching this in the cinema when it first came out was weird. I had certain expectations of this. As soon as Sam Jackson gets yeeted out the window, we have this complete tonal shift. It's like a sort of, like, jilted teenager. It's like, oh, we're actually getting some, like, interesting shit here.
Yeah, okay. It's easily the most violent Star Wars movie as well. Maybe other than Rogue One is probably the most violent. Because, like I said, there's child murder. There's full-blown domestic violence at the end of this movie. We'll get to that. But, yeah, Anakin suddenly is, like, now he's got red eyes and shit. And Hayden Christensen, again, I think his performance here, I think the cynicism helps here. Like, I think they were kind of, like, refreshing for them. It's like, finally, we don't have to do stupid shit for the second half of this movie again. We can actually, like, do some acting.
There's, like, a 15-minute-long fight scene at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, all this shit on the lava planet, it's, like, not only does it look like a video game, a fucking, like, life of Halo or whatever.
Yeah.
It just goes on for, like, 15 fucking minutes.
Actually, I take what I said back about the acting, because Natalie Portman has that scene.
Because of Obi-Wan.
Because of what you've done. What you plan to do. Stop. Stop now, come back. I love you.
Liar!
My favorite meme of this is the Joel Harver version of this scene, the animation channel. I'll send it to you. It's fucking, like, it's all I saw during this, because I've seen that video like 100 times. But yeah, it looks weird. I do love the scene where he kills all the fucking, like, alien Japanese people.
There's an episode free tie-in game where you play as Anakin and you go to the lava planet to kill all those guys. Yeah, you one-shot them to death. And then you have this, like, weird boss battle afterwards, but it's very much like...
I actually did play I did play that tie-in game. It's not terrible.
Yeah.
For what it is, it had a kick-ass, like, versus mode. You want to see Mace Windu fight General Grievous, the shit like that, where it's like, you know, as a kid... That's the thing, as a kid, this shit was cool, but yeah... And then there's also the fight with CG Yoda and Ian McDermott.
That fight is way better, because you have McDermott's gone full Emperor mode, so he's just, like, cackling and flowing, yeah, fucking, he, like,
Some of the best lines of this, my little green friend. Like, that's great. Like, he fucking nails this. And then the Emperor's just throwing shit at him like it's a wrestling match. He just picks up these fucking, like, giant car-sized tables and is just throwing them at Yoda.
I would like to see his justification for why the Senate, like, main Senate chamber has been fucked up. It's like, oh, some Jedi were having a fight here. I had nothing to do with it.
That is true. That never gets brought up. I would love to know about that. And then,
yeah, we need a book justifying that. Please give us a tie in, Disney.
You know, it probably exists. We joke. It's probably out there. There's so many books. When we do part four, We're not even going to be able to cover all of it. They're just too fucking much. We would be here for like 5 hours, and I don't have the time to do that.
So the ending of this, because it's a fucking prequel. Everything gets everything's all set up nice. Anakin's Darth Vader. He's in this. You've got the Death Star. The Death Star is being built. Ewan McGregor's on Tatooine, looking after baby Luke Skywalker. It's like. All right.
Yeah, it just kind of ends very. It's kind of it has a better ending than Rise of Skywalker does when we get to that. Like, we'll save it, but oh fuck, that is. It's so funny we get to see Alderaan for the first time in any of these movies because it's always just been a planet and it's like, oh, this is a kick ass little place. And then literally in the next film, it's about to be fucking gone. So it is pretty funny. But yeah, and Yoda brings up Qui-Gon again. I'm like, oh yeah, Liam Neeson was in one of these movies. By this point, I was like, fucking, I had so much to drink at the. Because I watched all three of these movies in one go, and I was like,
damn.
I can't. I was drinking heavily.
Because this franchise is still going. You have like Ghost Liam Neeson at the end of the Obi-Wan show.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you were in those movies. I forgot about that.
Yeah, because you know, Liam Neeson just took his money and left. And now, excuse me, I'm going to go do shitty action movies for the rest of my life. You know, it is Yeah, I guess, I don't know. It just. But anyway, that's the Star Wars prequels. Should I even bother asking you if you recommend this to the audience?
No, even if you're like into Star Wars, I couldn't really imagine. Like, I know the prequels have had this fucking very weird revisionism around it recently. Of like, actually, if you look into like context at the time, actually these are like secret masterpieces. I don't know what level of fucking like drugs you need to be on to like try and justify these, but just, I don't know. I do not recommend these.
I said in the last episode that Revenge of the Sith is my favorite. I take that back. Half of Revenge of the Sith is a good movie. I actually love
the Topher Grace prequels is your favorite.
Yeah, again,
that's what's so frustrating about these. They do have some interesting stuff in it. There's just like drowned in a sea of shit.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where no one said no. This is the problem with auteurism. I am all for filmmakers being allowed to make whatever they want, regardless of what a studio says. But sometimes you have a producer like Robert Evans, artistic guy and knows how to make movies better, you know. And Lucas just didn't have that on this. I don't know, it's just these movies suck. They're terrible. And I think a lot of the revisionism's just because of the irony poisoning nature.
Yeah.
And especially Star Wars at that point. The revisionism came after Rise of Skywalker, which we will get into. That movie's again, we're gonna have this discussion. It's the debate of cynicism versus sincerity, but I think it's just people are grasping at straws now.
We'll get into the next episode, but Star Wars is in this very weird state now, which is it's weird saying that because Star Wars is the franchise. The last movie was like 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yeah, but the prequels are. I'd say Revenge of the Sith is just skip the first half and watch the second half, and then avoid everything else.
Or you could just do what I do and watch. There's like an hour and a half Emperor Palpatine compilation of all his scenes, all the TV shows and movies, all stuck together. Just watch that instead. Yeah,
that sounds about better. Why didn't we just watch that for this show? Why did I have to watch almost 9 hours of this?
That's way more interesting because that character actually has a fucking arc. He's the only character that has any sort of character development.
You know, it's funny because we always say the Emperor is probably the best character of this series, and then they bring him back for Rise of Skywalker. I'm not going to talk about Rise of Skywalker yet. We'll save that for the next episode. But during this time, yeah, these movies are released and everything's hunky dory. And then George Lucas, a lot of people don't know this. George Lucas thought the world was going to end in 2012. And that's why he sold Star Wars for the $4 billion that they offered him. Obviously, Star Wars is even though these films are not particularly well regarded, there was a huge boom. And Disney at the time, were having a big hit with Marvel. And we needed a new cash cow and there's hot game for sale right now, and we'll leave it there because, yeah, it's funny. Those movies kind of have the exact opposite problem these movies do.
The Disney movies are producer-driven, whereas these are auteur-driven, and to get into why those two theories aren't particularly good for movie making, so join us next time for that.
Yep. But until then, stay safe, stay happy, and be good to each other.
No! Just chill out. Drink a 7-Up, eat a moon pie, quit murdering people.